Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In 2003, Megan Piotrowicz had the typical concerns of any middle schooler. She just wanted to do well in the sixth grade and make her school basketball team. What she wasn't expecting was to be diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma at only 12 years old. She immediately underwent treatment at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and eventually had her tumor removed. Throughout the entire experience, Megan took great comfort in the staff at the hospital and decided she wanted to be just like them when she grew up. 19 years later, she is. In today's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Megan explains what it was like to navigate a cancer diagnosis in middle school, how she found support from her family and faith, the joy she takes in giving back to the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia as an adult, how the pediatric cancer space has evolved in the past 20 years, advice to other children with cancer, and more.
So let's go down to the nitty-gritty. Tell me about your cancer journey, what year you were diagnosed and treated, what treatment you underwent, years.
So I was diagnosed in 2003. I was 12 years old, and I was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma. So that's a bone tumor. And I actually had it in my skull. Super rare place. A lot of times people get it in like their legs, but it needs to get amputated, arms, things like that. But mine was in my skull. So I went through 3 rounds of chemo. I was treated at CHOP, and I was actually put on a clinical trial. So the trial was measuring the in-between, like the rest period between chemo treatments. So it was either like you're in the 2-week rest period or the 3-week rest period. Mm-hmm. So I was put in the 2-week one, so the shortened amount of rest period. And I would get like a 6-day treatment, and then I would go inpatient, and then I would go home for the rest of that, 14 days. And then I would come back for a 3-day treatment, and then so on and on. So I would either have like a shortened rest period at home or a little bit longer, depending on which kind of days I was on. So that went on for 3 months. My tumor had shrunk from like the size of a tennis ball to the size of a golf ball in the first 3 months.
Wow.
So incredible, like just really great. It was great news for us. So, then I had surgery. And I was doing so well. It was a tumor resection surgery. So I was doing so well within that time. The neurosurgeon at the time, Dr. Sutton, actually decided just to reconstruct my skull at the same time. So typically it would be like you would have your resection and then you would come back and you'd have to get another surgery to like do your whole kind of like reconstruction of the skull. So I was doing so well. The team was doing so well that he's like, you know what? Let's just do it. She's in here. No need to bring her back if we can. So I think like all in all, it was around like an 8-hour surgery.
And did the doctor say, like, how unique of a situation that was when you were?
No, he didn't. I think that was their hope all along. It's just mm-hmm. like, you never know how you're going to come out of surgery. Some people do really well with it. Some people do not so well, and they have complications within the ICU. Hmm. I look back on, like, my time as a patient, and I just truthfully consider myself lucky. Like, I didn't get sick. I didn't, like, have those, like, throw-up bouts at home, like, anything like that. Like, I got sick on my first treatment, and then I was like, I was just good. Yeah. So then after that, I did 3 more months of the same chemo, just to make sure like they were positive, didn't spread, but just to be sure, that like they really did get everything.
Right.
And then I was, I think December 13th, 2003 is when I was like officially deemed cancer free. And that was like my last treatment, and I had gone, left that day.
Wow.
So that was kind of like my treatment journey.
So how do you remember, I mean, you were 12 years old. How do you remember it affecting your kind of day-to-day as a 12-year-old having this?
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, I feel like at any time when someone hears the word, like, cancer, you're like, crap. You just allude that to, like, that's really crappy situation and someone might die. So I remember, like, hearing the words, like, you have cancer. And my first 3 questions were, am I going to die? Can I still play basketball? And am I going to lose my hair? Like, those are the top 3 things that I was like worried about.
Right.
I did lose my hair, and I still played on all 3 of my basketball teams throughout that, like literally throughout the whole time. So
wow.
Again, like I said, I was lucky, but I think how it affected me was more just like, you know, like, you're a 12-year-old girl, like, I hadn't hit puberty yet, like, things matter to you, like, your hair, you're going, you're in sixth grade in middle school, and you're just like, you know, like, this is crazy, I'm gonna be wearing a wig, like, I was so swollen from, like, my steroids that I was right. on, and, like, I went from, like, losing weight to then just gaining so much, so, like, I think it's, like, more of the, like, aesthetics, I would say,
right?
Because my day-to-day, like, I was so lucky to have, like, a supportive school that would, like, give my homework to people that I would do, and I would do, like, schoolwork and chop with, like, some of the teachers that were there, or oh, wow. my friends would come visit me, like, I just felt very still in the loop of things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I remember coming back from my first day of like everything and everyone just like huddling around my classroom. And then I was like about to pass out because it was like so overwhelming.
My gosh.
So I think like day to day, it was more just the like aesthetics of being a 12-year-old girl and like what that means in like in the middle school. But then, I had such a strong support through my friends, through my family. Like I'm one of five kids.
Wow.
I'm the fourth. And so I had, you know, a bunch of older siblings and one younger. So, I think like them being strong for me was super important, a lot of prayer. And then me being strong for them as well. Like they probably never even thought of cancer until I had it. So I just think like the day to day was just like was so great because of my support system for sure. And then of course, just the like incredible staff at CHOP, really made like all of the difference, I think, in the experience.
So obviously the pediatric cancer space has witnessed several, if not many, many advances over a 20-year period. I mean, you kind of alluded to this because you were a part of a clinical trial, but how do you think your cancer team has utilized those advancements throughout your journey, whether it pertained to your treatment, your care, support system?
Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, I was on a clinical trial, so like we opted in to be a part of that research, which I think is super important.
Right.
So I think them just like utilizing the new advancements in terms of like, how is she reacting to this? How are her respirators? Is she coming in tired? Like taking all of that intake in while it was going on, I think was super important. And like playing around with my doses for how I felt like in the times that I was in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably how they utilized it a little bit. I think, like advancements just in like nursing education. They probably had to go through so much education to even like learn about this trial and why yeah. are we doing this? Why aren't we doing this? So like taking the time to educate the nurses was likely huge. And then I think even now, I'm technically still on a journey, right? Like, yes, I'm cancer free, but you just never know if you come back. So like, what does the survivorship program look like at CHOP, you know?
Yeah.
Like the long-term effects, like I've already frozen my eggs because I have the potential of going into early menopause.
Interesting.
And a guy, I think I remember them saying that like if a male went through my dosages, like he would be sterile. So like feeling lucky as a female, but then also like making my doctors making sure that I'm like, do you want a family? Is that important to you? Like, this is what you need to think about.
Right.
They asked me when I was 18 and my mom's like, let's get her through college. But then it's like, you know what I mean?
You have to think about it.
Right. And like, it's not something that like my mom or I or my dad will be thinking about. So it's like them utilizing those advancements of like what we have available now and then keeping me educated along the way. So I wouldn't say like, again, this is like 19 years ago, but like, I don't know if I necessarily like realized during the time what those advancements were, like, how they were happening and where they were happening and how it was affecting me. But when I look back, those are some of like the things that I think about that were likely key to my success in beating it.
So obviously you work at CHOP now, which is obviously the institution you receive treatment at and care. What motivated you to kind of pay it forward or pay it back, if you will?
Yeah. So when I was in treatment, I mean, like, seriously, since I was 12, I've always wanted to work at CHOP. I was like, how am I going to work there? I always thought I would be a nurse. I loved my nurses, cherished my time with them.
Mm-hmm.
I still keep in touch with some of them today. And
wow.
So I guess I always kind of thought I would get back into nursing. And then after school, I was like, I just like don't want to do school right now. I had an in at CHOP and I applied for a job and I got it working in the peri anesthesia care unit. So like working pre and post surgery with nurses and doctors and kind of doing like a lot of patient flow. So like that was my in and I was like, this is awesome. Like I've made it. Like I'm here. But I didn't love it. Like I loved the people I worked with, but I was like, this isn't really what I want to do with my life. So then I got introduced to the foundation and I knew I wanted to like work with families or patients in some aspect. Like that was very important to me. And
yeah.
And like try to affect their lives the way that the staff had affected mine so greatly. So when I like kind of did my rounds at the foundation, I was like, this is like definitely where I want to be. You know, philanthropy, I've grown up around it. Mm-hmm. My parents are philanthropic. I believe in it. I used, when I like lost my hair, I did like a hell of my hair grow back pool. And I was like doing fundraising that I didn't even know. It's definitely kind of like innate in me.
Right.
So when I found that role, I was like, yes, like I'm here and I'm doing it. And I've been in, the foundation for 6 years now, 8 years at CHOP total. So I think that like, that now I get to hear patient families and like why they're so grateful. And it just reminds me of my time that like, I feel I have a lot of similar shared experiences. Mm-hmm. And like matching a donor to like, if they can give $5 or they can give like $500,000, it still to me is like making them feel like that's the best gift in the world. I take that very seriously. I think that's like the best part of my job is like making them feel really good because there's just like no way to pay these doctors back. So like this is like their way of doing it. And making them feel good about it is just something that I feel is really special.
That's great. And you do mention your parents a lot through your entire time. And obviously you had firsthand account of what you went through, but do you remember what your parents went through during your journey?
Yeah. I do actually. Like, I know my mom stayed with me almost every single night at the hospital. When she left the first time, like I cried and my dad stayed with me and I was like, I want mom. But it ended up fine. He ended up shaving my head that night, which is probably why I didn't want him there.
Wow.
But I think that, you know, I think it's hard. My dad's dad died of cancer. I don't think he ever thought that like one of his kids would have it. I think that's probably the last thing that you would want.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember it being hard just in the fact of like, okay, we have four other kids to tell and we need to make sure she's okay all the time. And then I need to like, my mom stayed at home, but my dad was like, now I need to like adjust my schedule in life. And like, he's like, I would do it on a heartbeat. But I remember reading this like quote from him when he gave his first donation to CHOP for like, Ewing sarcoma research. It was like, you know, we thought we knew how good like CHOP was, but then we like experienced it, the institution like intimately. And it's really impossible to understand and like really appreciate that like jewel that lies in the backyard and like how CHOP is just people. Like its greatness comes from like the professional staff, the experts and like compassionate nurses, the friendly housekeeping like personnel and like smiling faces at the information desk. So like, I think it was super hard for them, but then they realized, you know, we're in the right space.
Yeah.
And this is going to be easier because of them. And I think like over, you get after that, like, initial shock, and then you're like, all right, how are we going to do this? And again, just like a whole lot of prayer, a whole lot of support system. My grandparents were running, you know, four other kids around to soccer games every weekend. And so yes, I'm sure it was hard on them in the beginning, but then it was just like life for 7 months or 8 months, however long it was.
So now that you're, you know, 31, working at CHOP, kind of using your experience to help others, what type of advice would you give children with cancer and even their parents more especially about the current landscape of pediatric cancer?
Yeah, I think we're in a really exciting time. Truthfully, just with like the experts around the world, the experts, I mean, I know what's going on at CHOP, which is like just truthfully incredible.
Right.
And I think my advice to the parents would be, really take the time to like listen and understand and just be there for their child. At no matter what age, like have a smile on their face, you know, make sure that you're comforting them. And I think during the treatments, when you're talking to the staff, like ask questions. Like if you don't understand something, you need to ask questions and you need to understand it just as well that they are understanding it. And then ultimately like trust in your team. They're looking out for you. They're looking out for your child and they're going to potentially give you the best course of action. And again, if you have questions, like keep asking. And then I would say for the kids going through it, like it's going to stink and you might get sick or you might lose your hair like I did. And it's going to be bad, but then like it will be good. And I know the survival rate is incredible these days. It's probably way better than even when I was sick. And they're working to make this 100% curable disease. So always stay positive and keep a good mindset and keep a smile on your face.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. Cancer Horizons Podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and
find us on Twitter @cure_today, Facebook @Cure Magazine, our Instagram @CureToday.